Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women in Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Good morning, Esther. How are you?
Good morning, Eric. I am doing great today. I'm so excited that we have another opportunity to hear from Irina. We had a great time the last time, and I'm just looking forward to more.
Yes, and this is part two, and I would say that just in my opinion, I learned a ton in part one, and if you're listening to this for the very first time, this is your first podcast, stop. Go back and listen to part one, because that was a wonderful podcast. You're going to get to know Irina really, really well, and basically the foundation for everything they're going to be talking about today. So with that in mind, Esther, I'm just going to hand it on over to you.
Okay. And we're speaking today, again, this is number two, with Irina Anisimova. She is a CPA. She's certified in financial forensics, and she is also accredited in business valuation. And those are complexities, but they apply very specifically to those who are considering and moving through the process of divorce. And today, again, I'll agree with Eric. I recommend going back to the first one because we talk a lot more about laying the foundation when one is considering divorce. Irina, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very fine. Thank you very much, Esther.
Good to see you again. So today we're going to talk more about helping how a forensic accountant such as yourself helps determine spousal and child support. So let's kick it off with, you spoke of it in the first podcast, but this issue of variable compensation and how your services and your expert work helps individuals determine spousal and child support.
My primary role in this is determining the income that is available for child and spousal support. This is not always a simple task, because when you have what we call variable compensation, that means that there is a base salary that someone is getting on a monthly basis, like $5,000 per month or $10,000 per month, that will be paid every month at a certain date. And the variable compensation comes on top of it. When we're talking about variable compensation, it's usually bonuses, commissions, and different awards. Bonuses and awards are usually once or twice a year, but a commission is something that you can imagine varies a lot. You can get a little bit one month, a lot the next month, and maybe nothing in the second, in the third month, and fourth month, and then again a lot in the fifth. So how do you handle this situation? Mm-hmm. Because child support and spousal support is paid on a monthly basis. There is a way to handle the variable compensation, of course, because usually there are court cases that address the issue, and usually there are tables that one can use to deal with variable compensation part. But the difficulty here is to determine what should be used to calculate child and spousal support, and where the variable compensation is, where the base compensation is, and maybe there is also equity compensation, which presents a different kind of difficulty. Because equity compensation, all those stock options that are so popular in our valley, all this restricted stock, equity compensation is part of the W-2 income, because once restricted stock vests, the amount goes on the W-2 income as part of regular compensation. But what vests are shares of the company. So it's not the money that gets into the pocket of the employee. It's the stock that gets deposited into a brokerage account. And that stock may be later sold or not sold and becomes part of property division. So we have something hybrid, like a mermaid.
Like a mermaid?
Yes. Not really a person and not really a fish. So how do you deal with that? There are, of course, ways and means to calculate income available for support when equity compensation is involved and to calculate all the difficulties, all the difficult parts of property division related to that. And I will not go into details, but this is part of my work because this is not something obvious. This is not that you can just take the number and divide by two.
Right. And then how do you know if somebody is, when you're talking about commissions, for example, how does one determine if one is in the process or will be receiving a commission 3 months from now, 6 months from now, but it's not in front of any data that you have through a W-2, I mean, through a pay stub?
Well, a commission is reflected on a pay stub as a commission. And in some situations, I need to read actually the agreements that govern the calculation of the commission and other things. One other part that is tricky is deferred compensation arrangements. And I'm not talking about 401k. 401k is easy. But there are other deferred compensations arrangements where the amount can be deferred, for example, for 3 to 5 years. It is just put into a kind of a sub-account, and then it is paid later. So this kind of a compensation arrangement is another complication to figure out what is available for child and spousal support now and what it isn't. And that sub-account can become part of the property division as well. So that's where you need an expert. That's where you need a person who can look at all the details, read all the necessary documents, and actually knows what documents to request, and so on.
And I think in the, well, two thoughts. One is, this is one of the things that you were speaking of in the first podcast about why it is important to have an expert rather than self-representation, is because you are a neutral party in this. You're not representing one side or the other. And if someone chooses to represent just themselves, there is a challenge should it go into a court proceeding.
Well, yes. Although I'm being hired usually by one party, my goal is to provide this party and this party's attorney with a clear understanding of what the financial situation is, what options the party has, and let the attorney argue about the legal implications. And this is one important part. And then once I'm put on the witness stand, I can testify to what procedures I used. And I am not someone the judge has seen in a custody fight. I haven't lost my credibility with the judge. And I am perceived as a more neutral party.
And I think also, I would imagine that your background as a CPA, you know, you have had 20 years of accounting experience, that that also helps in your research and your awareness of the documents that you're looking at, and things like deferred comp, executive comp, restricted stock units, stock options. All of those have different tax implications as well. I said implications. You can keep that in the podcast. Implications as well. And so your background and experience really helps give you an awareness of what it is you're looking at and looking for.
Yes, and it especially comes into play when I am dealing with income for support available from a business. Because once you have a business involved, Once you have a family business that is or has been providing income for the family for a number of years, you cannot help, but you have to hire an expert. You need an accountant who will be able to go into the details of the accounting for the business operations.
And you're also, that's your ABV accreditation, you're accredited in business valuation. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about those households where there is a business that's providing the income.
Well, the business complicates things. It complicates things magnificently, especially when the business provides all income that the family used during marriage. It's not unusual when, for example, one partner in the marriage is a professional, an attorney, a CPA, a doctor, mm-hmm. a dentist, earning a lot of money through the business, mm-hmm. and that's basically all income that the party that the parties get during marriage. So the difficulty here is this. First of all, what income is available for support? And second is, what value does the business have? Mm-hmm. Because if the business was started during marriage and grew during marriage, this is a community asset. But this is not a simple kind of asset like a house,
right,
where you can look up at Zillow and see the rise in market value, or at least what they consider market value. Mm-hmm. The business is a living organism. It's an entity that has its own particular ways of running and growing. I do business valuations for divorce purposes only, and mostly I deal with professional practices and small businesses, meaning they are owned by the parties, where, for example, someone owns a medical practice or something else, like a body shop, maybe a store. Mm-hmm. What is difficult here and what requires an expert here is the tax reporting for the business mm-hmm. income does not always, or I would rather say most of
hardly
the time,
ever. Right.
Or hardly ever.
Right.
Well, that depends on the owners and on the kind of the business, of course. In any event, the tax return does not really reflect the money that comes into the family or used to come into the family from the business.
And that doesn't mean that there's something illicit going on. It's just the structure of how the return is done and how things are reported.
No, there may be nothing illicit mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. But for example, if the business is an S corporation, mm-hmm. the business doesn't necessarily have to be very profitable to provide good cash flow to the owner, because there can be distributions which are not necessarily current year income. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that comes to mind is the adjustments for the influence of tax laws on the reporting of business operations. And I'm talking here about amortization and depreciation.
Oh, so those are heavy words. Tell us a little bit more, like when you're looking at things like amortization, depreciation, those things that show up in business tax returns, how does that fall out in terms of spousal and child support determination?
Well, imagine a situation where the business has a taxable loss. And you look at the business tax return and the income is negative. The bottom line is the minus. It's on the first page. Do you take this as the sign that there is no income to support the children? No, you go looking into details and you realize that this business deducted a huge amount in depreciation or amortization that, when adjusted for the real economic depreciation or real cash flow, suddenly makes the business profitable instead of non-profitable.
So you're basically saying there's things that one can legitimately do in accounting that can make the tax implication more beneficial to the owner of the business, but that it may look like something like a loss, but actually there's good cash flow, there's good ways to provide for support, where at first glance, it may look like, oh my gosh, I'm looking at the tax return and we're operating at a loss. Well, actually, if you dig a little bit deeper, it's not what it might first appear.
Of course. And an example of this perfectly legitimate tax deduction that can convert business income into a business loss is 179 depreciation deduction. It is allowed on new equipment purchased in this tax year, and you can expense the cost of this equipment all in 1 year.
And so that's like buying new things like new computers, new...
Think about something more expensive than a computer.
A building. Not a building, actually. You can't do that in 1 year. Okay.
You cannot do that.
I'll turn it to you.
let's assume we're talking about a professional practice, an ophthalmology practice, and they just replaced their equipment. You know, all those fancy machines you go and look into when you get your prescription glasses.
That's right. You look in and there's a balloon and it blows
all sorts
of smoke in your face.
Well, those machines, they are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are bought, they're not replaced every year. They may last 7-10 years. And that's why the cost essentially has to be, the money for the purchase has to be accumulated over a number of years. And this is a legitimate business deduction, the allowance for the replacement of assets, which is another name for depreciation. But the tax depreciation, they can expense the cost of these expensive machines all in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of a deduction, say, for $50,000, they take a deduction for $250,000, mm-hmm. and here you have a loss.
Right.
Another example is an amortization for intangible assets. Intangible assets tend to be sunk costs that were paid in the beginning when the business started. The business may have been purchased and the owner paid something. The owner paid a purchase price that exceeded the value of the mm-hmm. intangible assets. Again, let's talk about this ophthalmologist who purchased the practice. There was some equipment there, but he paid much more than this equipment would have cost him had he bought it in an auction or as used pieces of equipment. So this difference is called goodwill, and it is paid for the goodwill accumulated by the practice, the location, the assembled workforce, and everything else.
The client base that's coming in.
The client base that's coming in.
Yeah.
But it's a substantial amount of mm-hmm. money. That was paid maybe 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The money... The tax code allows amortization of such things, and it usually allows it for 15 years. So for 15 years, the doctor who purchased the practice will be writing off amortization and deducting it from his yearly income. But the money was paid long time ago, so it's not a deduction that reduces actual cash flow from the business.
Right.
And we're talking about child and spousal support today.
So it is looking at all of these things that I'm going to bring us back full circle to where we started, that one of the things, if whether somebody has been served with a petition for divorce, or if one is, gosh, you know, so many times it happens. I'm just going to use this as an example where one discovers that one's spouse hasn't been faithful. And that's such a shocking thing to find out. And they're contemplating divorce. Can you, when we talked about this in the first podcast, Let's come back to that in terms of what should a woman do in either situation?
Well, first thing a woman needs to do is to get a consultation from an attorney. Even if she was served with a petition, it doesn't mean necessarily that she needs to sign it right away and file it. The response to the petition doesn't need to be signed immediately on the same day. So the first thing that the woman should do would be to go to an attorney and get a consultation.
And I know so much as, and I think it does happen more with women than with men, is that we feel like we have to do something. Something has been put in front of us, and we have to respond to that thing. Whereas what you're saying is very difficult thing to receive, allowing oneself to get information and not feel compelled to respond immediately.
That is correct. And it is even more important in a situation when a woman discovers that her husband is cheating, while he doesn't really know that this truth is already out. There is absolutely no need to confront both situations with an immediate action. The consultation with attorney, and then if the woman doesn't really have much knowledge about the financial situation of the family, then she needs to think about how to get this knowledge. Because, of course, she may not be the one who filed the tax returns. The husband may have been responsible for that. But she is a party on a joint return. She can call the IRS and ask the IRS to send copies of the tax returns. She may not want to receive those copies at the house, but it's easy to rent a PO box. Another thing, if she thinks or discovers after looking at the tax returns that there is a managed account, a managed financial account,
like a brokerage account or an investment account,
of course, then she can contact the brokerage and find out who is the financial advisor on the account and discuss the situation with this person, because she will need all those documents later on for the divorce.
When you say discuss the situation, it can be as simple as, oh, you know, I just need to see a statement of our recent activity. Had you said that to me? That's what you mean.
Right.
They don't have to disclose, I've just discovered something.
No.
Just getting the information.
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And I would caution of disclosing that you are considering a divorce to anyone except your attorney and immediate family member who you need for support. And by the way, do not listen to family members' advice. These are the worst sources of advice I've ever seen.
What types of things have been suggested that you kind of makes you shiver?
Well, for example, kick him out of the home and change the lock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, you may want to kick him out of the home. That's a legitimate desire, but that's your community property. And before doing that and changing the lock, you better think how you're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you kick him out, he is probably not going to pay the mortgage.
And that's,
and the utilities and all the rest of it.
Yeah, everything else that goes in, the property taxes, the insurance. And that's such a challenging thing here in this area, as well as in many areas around the country, where one can't simply just start two households. Housing is very, very expensive.
Yes, and of course you need to consider where the children would go to school and so on. So if you are in a situation that requires all these considerations, well, keep the information to yourself for a while until you figure out what you want to do, how you want to do it, and then proceed with caution.
Now, a few weeks ago, we had on Karen Sparks. She's a certified divorce financial analyst, a CDFA. And can you talk a little bit about what your approach is in your professional capacity versus hers as a CDFA?
Of course. I had a very interesting discussion with Karen some time ago, and we kind of compared notes. And we determined that she usually gets involved in the divorce process on an earlier or later stage. She usually works with couples right in the beginning when they are trying to figure out how they're going to live, how they're going to divide their assets, and they are discovering what they have, what kind of attitudes they have towards the property division process. She can be more imprecise than I can be. She can do the work with a result that would be an estimate, not something that she would be able to defend in court. For example, we sometimes do the analysis of community interest in a property that, according to the title, belongs to one party. For me, it's an onerous work because lots of the times I just cannot find enough documents to calculate this community interest precisely enough to be defendable in court. This is not an obstacle for CDFA. They will provide an estimate to the couple because the couple is at the early stage of their divorce process and they needed to negotiate the settlement. I come around the middle when attempts at resolving the divorce amicably and with mediation fail, and the parties proceed to litigation. That's where I start working. And occasionally I involve CDFAs in the final process where the parties are dividing their assets and there is a question of what to do with those assets. How can we go on living our lives after we are divorced? And in these situations, I occasionally call CDFAs and ask them to help the clients to figure out what they want out of the divorce settlement and how they want to proceed. Quite recently, I had a situation where the CDFA helped us to settle a very contentious case where the parties were about to litigate to the hilt, and then someone said, stop. You do not have the assets to go on indulging in litigation. You need actually to look around and see what you can do to remain in this area. You have a three-year-old child. You need to figure out how you can find enough money in the property division to allow the other spouse or both spouses to have houses in this area.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I really appreciate that there's ways that the different professionals work with others and that their skills and services can overlap. And we all connect with each other in our communities. And I am so grateful and appreciative that you have spent this time here for two sessions, Irina. And I trust that the audience can understand why two sessions were needed. So thank you so much.
Thank you. The pleasure was all mine.
I know that there's so much more that we could talk about. If somebody needs to reach you, Irina, how would you recommend that they do so?
I would suggest starting from my website, where I have information about different types of work I do, and I hope fairly clear explanations what these types of work involve. The website is www.divorceaccountant.us. Hopefully it's easy to remember.
Very good. Well, thank you again, Irina. Thank you to everyone listening today. I hope, especially because I'm newly married, it's kind of an ironic topic, but I really hope that our intent with these podcasts is really to give access to resources that can really support somebody in making good decisions for themselves, their families, and for their future. Thank you so much.
Again, thank you guys both so very much. This was very educational, and you definitely could have had a third podcast, probably a fourth podcast, with you guys were on a roll. So thank you, Esther, so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Eric. It's great to speak with you again, too.
You betcha. And thank you all for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.